KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, it's mostly clear and 37 degrees. We look for partly cloudy skies today with a high of 58. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, your Trane home comfort specialist dealer. In Western Iowa news, Pottawatomie County Sheriff Jeff Danker yesterday issued a warning to the residents of the county and surrounding area about a phone scam that's once again making its way in the area. Danker says his office has received multiple reports of attempted phone fraud. The complainants say they had received calls from persons claiming to be a grandchild or a close relative who says they've been arrested. The caller typically tells the victim they need a large amount of money wired to their location so they can post bail and be released from custody. Danker encourages anyone who receives a similar call to report the matter to your local law enforcement agency. If you have reason to believe the call is legitimate, call a family member or the law enforcement agency where the so-called family member is allegedly being held prior to sending any money. You may recall a few years ago we told you about a Cass County resident who received a similar call from a person claiming to be a man's grandson who had allegedly been arrested in Canada. The potential victim questioned the caller, who then became very defensive. The person who was calling was unable to answer a challenge question posed to confirm their identity. It was a question only the man's real grandson would have been able to answer. The victim refused to send any money to the caller. News time is 8:01.
Part of making a major purchase is knowing what kind of service it'll require. For reliable home comfort systems, just look to us. Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, your local Trane dealer. Bob Jacobson here. From major repairs, including new house construction, to seasonal maintenance, we can make your home more comfortable. When it comes to heating, cooling, venting, or plumbing your new home or existing residence, Jacobson Plumbing and Heating can get the job done right and in a professional, timely manner. How can I be sure? Because when you call Jacobson Plumbing and Heating, you'll talk with me, the owner, and I'm also the one who will be doing the work. It's my name and my reputation at stake, two things I don't take lightly. I'll do the work, and I'll do it right. Satisfaction guaranteed. Call Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle. Don't put it off. Call me right now. 877-838-8580. Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, where it's hard to stop a train.
The Cass County Board of Supervisors this morning will act on approving a resolution setting the posted weight limits on county bridges. The move will take place during the board's meeting at the courthouse, which begins at 9 a.m. In other business, the supervisors will hear a report from Zoning Administrator Rich Hansen with regard to zoning changes and act on approving a trustee for the Pomosa Township. The person who held the position previously has moved from the township. The board will also review and discuss proposed fiscal year 2013 budgets. And the Adair County Board of Supervisors are set to meet in less than a half an hour in Greenfield at 8:30 for a special session. During that session, they'll have a department head meeting and then work on the budget afterward. An independent review of last year's prolonged Missouri River flooding says there was little more the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers could have done to avoid the widespread expensive damage. Among those on the review team, Kara McCarthy is a senior forecast hydrologist with the Natural Resources Conservation Service based in Portland, Oregon. McCarthy said they looked through a mountain of information.
First of all, just finding out about the flooding, looking at the numbers and finding out the extremes, and then finding out not just the water amount, but, you know, the damage amounts, talking to people and hearing what happened to them. I think that was really important, and I'm glad that we had that opportunity. It helped to complete the picture.
McCarthy says members of the Corps of Engineers started to react early in the spring as soon as they saw the massive inflows of snowmelt and rain move into the reservoir system.
By May 1, they recognized that they had a lot of water to get rid of. So they had actually started to get rid of water in the beginning of April. And so even if they had released more water in April than they did, they couldn't have evacuated all that water. It was just a tremendous amount of water that came down.
While she admits it's difficult to strike a perfect balance, she says the report recommends the Corps find a way to set aside more upstream flood control storage space to avoid a repeat.
That's really what was needed this year. And again, if you do have that, you have less water in the reservoir, so you have less water for recreation, less water for downstream water uses and for irrigation. And so this is the problem that the whole entire Missouri River system needs to look at.
Road repairs from the flooding in Iowa alone exceeded $50 million. The Corps estimates almost $600 million in damage was done just to the levees located along the river. Elsewhere in state news, authorities say 10 people were injured in a collision involving a school bus near Knoxville Monday. The Marion County Sheriff's Office said the accident happened between a Knoxville community school bus and a car at around 4 p.m. A radio station in Knoxville reports that Fire Chief Mike Roberts said the driver of the car was flown to a hospital, while nine others, including some children, were transported by ambulances to other vehicles. There was no immediate word on the extent of the injuries. Roberts says seven other children were released to their parents at the scene. Authorities are still searching for the source of an odor that sickened two dozen students and staff members in the cafeteria at a Cedar Rapids middle school. Emergency crews were called to Harding Middle School at lunchtime on Monday. The cafeteria, which is in a dome, and the gym, which is also in a dome, were evacuated. Fire Department spokesman Greg Bulow said monitors detected no dangerous gases in either the cafeteria or the gym. He says various samples were taken in the cafeteria, but nothing but food products was detected. Additional samples were sent to the University of Iowa's Hygienic Laboratory. Bulow says 18 students and 6 adults had symptoms ranging from burning eyes to vomiting. 8 were taken to the hospital for an evaluation. Authorities say there's no evidence of any connection between the suicides of two 15-year-old boys in the Des Moines suburb of Johnston. One died Saturday, the other died on Sunday. Johnston Police Chief Bill Vaughn said there's no evidence of any crime involved, and that the medical examiner has said the boys killed themselves. Johnston school officials sent an email alert to parents of 8th through 12th grade students after the second boy died. A meeting for parents is planned for this evening at 5 o'clock at the Johnston Middle School. Two experts on loss and grieving will talk about how parents can discuss the boys' deaths with their children. A father and his 6-year-old son have been killed in a head-on collision near Solon in eastern Iowa. The Iowa State Patrol says the accident happened around 8 a.m. when a car driven by Gregory Engrave of Solon veered across the center line and struck an oncoming SUV. The 37-year-old Engrave died at the scene. His son Zachary was taken to the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City, where he later died. The driver of the SUV, Melissa Backus of Solon, was injured. She's in stable condition at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. Zachary Engrave was a kindergarten student at Lakeview Elementary School in Solon. The murder trial of a Cedar Rapids man and his ex-girlfriend charged in the death of his young daughter is being delayed. Zariah Schlitter and Amy Parmer of Hiawatha are accused in the death of 17-month-old Cameron Schlitter in March of 2010. She died a week after medics found her suffering from seizure-like symptoms at a Hiawatha apartment. Schlitter had asked for a continuance during a pretrial conference held last Friday in Linn County District Court. Parmer and the state didn't resist. A new trial date will be scheduled. Schlitter and Parmer are both charged with first-degree murder and child endangerment resulting in death, and both have pleaded not guilty and are free on bond. Ag groups and utility companies are being challenged to propose changes in a bill that would set a new state standard, a statewide standard, for addressing cases of stray electric voltage that zap farm livestock. Representative Stuart Iverson, a Republican from Clarion, is the bill's manager.
You know, it's just easy to say no. And all right, how do we solve the problem? Because we know stray voltage can be a huge problem.
It's mainly a problem on dairy farms where, for example, cows hooked up to milking machines sometimes can get zapped if there's a power surge. Matthew Steinfeld, a lobbyist for the Iowa Farm Bureau, says farmers and utilities are doing just fine in resolving any problems, and the bill is unnecessary.
The best thing is to quickly identify and resolve stray voltage issue. That's what farmers want to do. But what this bill does, I mean, it's a major change that will have a significant effect. In a way, it takes away the right to a due process. No other group in the state of Iowa is subject to something like this.
Kelly Paschke lobbies for the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. That's another group that's opposed to the bill.
This bill goes beyond just setting a standard for stray voltage. It completely changes how stray voltage claims can be pursued.
A 3-member subcommittee has given initial approval to the controversial bill, but 3 legislators say that they're hoping the interest groups involved suggest major changes in the legislation. Representative Brian Quirk of New Hampton was a member of the 3-member committee. Quirk, who just happens to be an electrician, said the bill needs to better define the standards for the stray voltage tests.
Cattle are a lot like people, and pain that they can tolerate or tolerance levels are different. So, I mean, it's like, you know, where is that threshold?
Quirk supports the bill's requirement that the State Utility Board be the first stop for resolving disputes over stray voltage.
I like the fact that the utility board, being a third-party resource to actually define where the fault did occur, should it be with the utility or should it be with the consumer?
Critics say the bill limits a farmer's ability to sue for damages if their livestock are harmed by stray voltage. Taking a look at national news headlines at this hour, Mitt Romney is looking to tighten his grip on the Republican presidential nomination in today's Florida primary. Romney is the heavy favorite in the winner-take-all contest, but Newt Gingrich hasn't given up. He plans to visit several polling places in the state today, and he says in the long run the Republican Party isn't going to nominate a liberal Republican. Former GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain has been backing Newt Gingrich, but says he's also be comfortable supporting Mitt Romney if Romney were to win the Republican nomination. But Cain says that both Gingrich and Romney carry negatives that would be attacked by President Barack Obama's re-election campaign. Officials are looking into the cause of yesterday's nuclear power plant failure in northern Illinois. The loss of electricity forced operators to release low-level radioactive steam from a reactor to cool it off. Officials believe they may have traced the shutdown at Exelon Nuclear's Byron Generating Station to a piece of equipment at a switchyard dozens of miles away. And the president of California's Claremont McKenna College says a senior administrator has resigned after admitting that for years he falsified SAT scores provided to publications like U.S. News and World Report. The information is used in school rankings. The New York Times says the college's president told staff and students Monday about the falsified scores. I'll be back with the funeral announcements right after this.
Last week, Mark became the proud father of twins.
Look, pumpkin silk diapers.
Like any new father, he wants the best for his girls. So he also became the proud owner of a Trane central cooling system. It keeps Mark's whole house cool and comfortable no matter how hot it gets outside.
Doesn't that feel good?
And since Trane systems can also lower energy costs, there's more for the college fund.
Ivy League, of course.
When they say expect more from a Trane, they back it with over 90 years of industry-leading innovation, engineering, and manufacturing excellence. Hi, this is Bob Jacobson, owner of Jacobson Plumbing, Heating, and Fontenelle, your area Trane dealer. You know the true Trane difference? You, your family, your comfort, and what it means most to us is providing better, healthier air for those that mean the most to you. Shouldn't that be reason enough to call me now at 877-838-8580? Call me now and let me show you how you can save money with a new Trane home comfort system. 877-838-8580, Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, where it's hard to stop a Trane.
And in our funeral announcements this morning, Russell E. Peterson, age 86, of Kimbleton, died Friday at the Audubon County Memorial Hospital. Funeral services for Russell Peterson will be today at 10:30 at the Kessler Funeral Home in Audubon. Opal Marie Dwinell, age 92, died Thursday at Mercy Hospice House in Johnston. Funeral services for Opal Dwinell will be today at 11 o'clock at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Dexter. Raymond E. Drammon, age 54, of Casey, died Thursday at his home. Funeral services for Raymond Drammon will be today at 11 o'clock at the Casey United Methodist Church. Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart has arrangements. Marceline Fredrickson, age 78, of Atlantic and formerly of Hamlin, died Saturday at Atlantic Nursing and Rehab. Funeral services for Marceline Fredrickson will be held tomorrow at 9:30 at the Kessler Funeral Home in Exira. Reba Becky Lund, age 87, of Council Bluffs and formerly of Minden, died Saturday at the Risen Sun Christian Village. Funeral services for Becky Lund will be held Wednesday at 10:30 at Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Avoca. Ronald Bergen, age 77, of Harlan, died Friday at the Methodist Hospital in Omaha. Funeral services for Ronald Bergen will be held Wednesday at 11 o'clock at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Harlan. Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Joseph E. Lucian, age 91, of Erling, died Saturday at the Little Flower Haven Nursing Home. A mass of Christian burial service for Joseph Lucian will be on Wednesday at 11 o'clock at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Erling. Pauly Jones Funeral Home of Harlan has the arrangements. Michael H. Jewell, age 66, of Audubon, died Friday at his home. A mass of Christian burial service for Michael Jewell will be Wednesday at 11 a.m. at St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Audubon. Kessler Funeral Home in Audubon has arrangements. Vicki Jo Parker, age 57, of Avoca, died Friday at Mercy Hospital in Council Bluffs. Memorial services for Vicki Jo Parker will be held tomorrow at 2:30 at Hockenberry Family Care Funeral Home in Atlantic. Sherry Ann Freeman, age 64, of Menlo, died Saturday at her home. Funeral services for Sherry Ann Freeman will be held Thursday at 10 a.m. at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Stewart. Walter August Mordhorst, age 93, of Harlan, died Sunday at Murtu Medical Center in Harlan. Funeral services for Walter Mordhorst will be on Thursday at 10:30 at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Harlan. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Leroy W. Rokolds, age 81, of Glenview, Illinois, and formerly of Adair, died Friday at the Glenview Terrace Nursing Center. Graveside services for Leroy Rocholtz will be held Friday at 11 a.m. at the Delmanutha Cemetery north of Casey. Ockenberry Family Care Funeral Home has the arrangements. And 91-year-old Eloise Peterson of Atlantic died Monday at the Heritage House. Funeral services for Eloise Peterson will be held at Zion Lutheran Church in Atlantic. The date and time are currently pending. Roland Funeral Home of Atlantic is in charge of the arrangements. That is a check of the news this hour here on KJAN, brought to you by Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, where it's hard to stop a train. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.